Hey, what's up, you guys, and welcome to Disney Debates, a brand new debate show sponsored by The Popcorn Talk, where you can get all your after show and Disney movie news. Check out The Popcorn Talk on YouTube and thepopcorntalk.com. But as we move into it, like I said, this is not a normal debate show. It is Disney Debates because we are all huge Disney fans, so we will be diving very, very deep into the hard Disney questions, from movies to television shows to theme parks. But today we have a very important debate, and as we all grew up in the Disney Renaissance, or the golden era of Disney 2D animations, we'll be debating the best Disney Renaissance movie today. And who do we have for our debaters over here?
What's up, everybody? It's me, Sarah. You know me from this channel. And today I'm going to be debating for The Lion King as the best Disney Renaissance movie.
Hey, it's Max. You know me from my channel, Mr. Cheesy Pop, where I do all things Disney, and I teach you how to Disney, but today I'm gonna teach you why Beauty and the Beast is the best.
And I'm Tiffany from Thingamavlogs and Who's It's and What's It's, and I gotta rep The Little Mermaid today, because it is without a doubt the best Disney Renaissance movie.
So not only do we have our debaters here, but we have our one and only fact checker.
Hi! I'm Chelsea. You can find me at Practical Folks on YouTube, and I will be fact-checking today and ruining everyone's fun, I guess, making it more fun, depending on how we feel about facts.
So, like I said, we'll be diving deep into these movies. We've broken it down to a couple categories between characters, soundtrack, the villain, the moral of the story, and its place in Disney history. So we're going to start it off with a little, like, opening comment for your movie, Sarah.
There's so much to say. I'm glad we have subcategories. I believe that The Lion King is the best Disney Renaissance movie because I think that all of the advancements that the previous Renaissance movies made led up to Lion King being the most perfect. It wins in every category. It's universally relatable. It has iconic moments that will be talked about and replicated forever. And, you know, just like lions.
Like lions.
It's the best, and I'm prepared to tell you why.
Moving on.
Off to a good start.
Moving on to Max, repping Beauty and the Beast. Why is Beauty and the Beast the best Disney Renaissance film?
Beauty and the Beast is the best. Well, if you take out the A in Beast, it already is the best, so...
Can we confirm that, Chelsea? I mean...
But no, it really is the best because Beauty and the Beast really set the bar for what a Disney animated movie should be and still is today. Without Beauty and the Beast, we got nothing else. So for that reason and many more, which I guess we'll get into, but that's where I'll just generally put it, yeah.
Great. And Tiffany, The Little Mermaid, why is it the best Disney Renaissance film?
You know what's funny, Max? As you said, like, without Beauty and the Beast, there would have been nothing. But what was the first movie of the Disney Renaissance? It's The Little Mermaid. Literally, the Disney Renaissance does not exist if The Little Mermaid did not exist. We get Glenn Keen coming out, and we get Alan Menken, we get Jodie Benson. There's like, without a doubt, it has to be the best one, because it doesn't exist without The Little Mermaid.
So there you have it, our opening statements. Now, if you guys have a prediction on who you think will debate the best Disney Renaissance movie, or just throw your own options in there, go ahead and do that now. But we're going to be talking about the first subcategory, characters. Characters are a big role in every Disney movie, especially with princesses and animals, talking animals. We have those as well. So let's throw it over to Sarah. The characters of Lion King.
Let's get into it. The Lion King has an incredible cast of characters. First of all, not only do you have Simba as a kid, you have Simba as an adult, multi-dimensional character arc. You have the greatest sidekicks of all time, Timon and Pumbaa, the first gay couple in a Disney movie. Maybe that won't make it in. Timon and Pumbaa are incredible sidekicks. They teach Simba a very valuable lesson, Hakuna Matata, which has like remained a great lesson for all of us. And Mufasa is great for the time that we have him. Zazu is a great, you know, balance to Timon and Pumbaa's silliness. You have Nala, who's an incredible female protagonist. And I'll save Scar for the villains category, but I think you get so many different types of characters. You get Simba, who you grow up with. You get the funny ones. You get the serious ones. You get the great patriarch figure. Even throw Sarabi in there, you know, like she's in there. Oh, and let's not forget the hyenas with Whoopi Goldberg as an incredible voice talent. You know, there's even like a dimension of character tropes with those characters because you have Whoopi Goldberg being like the smart, like conniving one. You have Ed being like a total dummy and bringing the comic relief. And then you have Bonsai, you know, who's just kind of in between. And it's all great. It's all good fun. You got the serious ones. You got the funny ones. And
great. So those are the characters of The Lion King. Now, Max, why does Beauty and the Beast have the best characters?
Why does Beauty and the Beast have the best characters? Belle is like the first princess that could actually like think for herself. And I mean, if you...
No, Tiff's not getting mad already.
please finish, Max.
I think Belle... I mean, I wasn't a girl, but if I, growing up, but if I was, and I saw Belle, I'd be like, yeah, yes, look at this. This is a princess who is like different and that's okay. Like, I just feel like Belle is a great role model. And I think as far as princesses, she kind of has set we're getting rid of the old princesses of the past, and this is our new princess. And this was, you know, like 27 years ago, but I think that there were a lot of things that were very progressive for Belle at the time. So we've got a movie here with inanimate objects that are so lovable, like this guy. For a movie to bring to life a candelabra and a clock, Cogsworth, I mean, we're talking really revolutionary stuff here. These characters are incredible, and they're so full and rich. And LeFou and Gaston, who I'll get into later, are, I think, revolutionary as well, but I'll get into more Gaston later.
Great. Moving on to The Little Mermaid. Tiffany, why does The Little Mermaid have the best Disney characters?
For starters, how amazing is it that we get an entire cast of, like, underwater characters? I mean, it was such a, I feel like, a leap of faith for the studios to do it. It was something that really hasn't been explored I feel like it hasn't really been explored in depth or to that extent yet. And, I mean, really when it comes down to it, Ariel redefined what a Disney princess is. And the Disney princesses are arguably one of the most iconic things about Disney. It's one of the things we relate to Disney the most. And she was the first relatable heroine that we really get in a Disney film. I mean, she's kind of clumsy. She's kind of a tomboy. She's not perfect. And I mean, let's be real. What 16-year-old girl hasn't had a fight with her dad? I mean, I grew up with Ariel, and I don't feel like she was a bad role model whatsoever. I know people give her a bad rep. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that later when it comes to morals. I already see Sarah getting in on that action. The world itself is super exciting, and the characters that they made. Eric is like the hottest Disney prince to exist. Let's just be real. Sarah's like, what is that? Who? What? For the record, I don't really think Leo looks like Eric. I want to go on record before it gets
That's
really weird.
That's all I was making a face about.
Before people want me to jump in and fact check that, that is a subjective opinion. And we will leave it at that.
True. I mean, just the fact that it's a mermaid alone, I mean, she's a really cool princess. She's a really cool girl. She knows what she wants. She's not afraid to go after it. And really, Ariel is like the epitome of what it means to grow up. Like, she makes what could be considered a very rash decision, and she's willing to live with her consequences at the end of the day. And I think that's really what it means to, like, kind of grow up and find yourself and, like, take lead of your own life. So she's amazing. Like, she's wonderful.
Amazing. Now that we've heard a little about these characters from each movie, I'm going to open up the floor to you guys to debate a little on what each of you have said.
First of all, Flynn Rider had a hot man meeting to design him, so he's definitely the hottest Disney prince. Anyway, but I just, you know, whatever.
That's like, true.
That's just the most recent thing that I wanted to comment.
It's true.
Confirmed.
Great fact check.
Yes. I feel like I want to let you guys... I feel like you have a lot to say about... Belle.
I have a lot to say about Simba, actually. Simba.
Bring it.
Ouch.
Dude, Simba is such a brat. Like,
oh,
really?
You're fighting for Ariel and you're going to call Simba a brat?
Simba is like classically the worst person you would want to rule. He has an entire song about how all he wants to do is like brush up on looking down. Like, that's not the kind of ruler you want for your kingdom.
He's a child when he sings that. He still grows up.
He grows up. Yeah. He goes and lives this Hakuna Matata life. And then Nala shows up and is basically like, oh, your mom is dying. Everyone is dying. And he's like, oh, like Hakuna Matata. He has to get a visit from his ghost dad before he goes back and does literally anything.
Okay. No, first of all. Simba has probably the most devastating situation to deal with of any of the characters that we're about to discuss. Because he witnesses the death of his father and thinks it's fully his fault. He thinks it's his fault. He literally has PTSD. He runs away because his uncle is like, you gotta run away because everyone's gonna like murder you because you killed your dad. He's like, Simba, what have you done? How terrifying. That's the worst. And so like he runs away. He's literally dying of starvation in the desert and he gets saved by these two animals who are like, listen, they don't even know what happened to him. Nala comes and is like, you have to come back. And he's like, I can't come back because they all think I murdered my dad. She doesn't know that it was Scar's fault. And so it's literally only until someone is like, you know what, even if you did kill me, Mufasa is saying, even though he doesn't say that, like, you have a responsibility to be king.
But when he confronts Scar at the end and Scar is like, you're a murderer. And he's like, I'm not a murderer. Why does Simba not?
He still thinks that he's responsible.
Why doesn't he say like, hey, there was a wildebeest stampede. Like he does, if he just told what actually happened and like who in their right mind within that like, but Pride Land is going to be like, you are a murderer, Simba. You know what? Like, Scar's right.
Because I think they would. If it was simply like, he got stuck in a wildebeest stampede and his father had to come save him and subsequently died, that would be his fault. He fully didn't see what Scar did.
It doesn't matter if he saw what... It doesn't matter what Scar saw.
It's because if he said that, there'd be a fact checker lion to be like, I can't prove that you didn't.
Okay, poor Simba had to see his dad, you know, die. But Belle didn't even know what happened to her mom and had to deal with that for her whole life. Not to mention the fact that this girl was, like, shunned by everybody because she read books.
Here's the thing about Belle.
She was different, and everyone hated her for it.
Belle is super pretentious.
Pretentious.
The song Belle is her walking around being like, look at all these simpletons. Yeah. They're all so simple and stupid. That's what the song Belle is about.
Where do you get that from?
She's like, there goes the baker. Yeah. So simple. I want so much more than this life. That's what she says.
Because all these people just dismissed her. And she was like, no, I'm actually better than this. I don't think that's
exactly.
So pretentious.
She says she's better than this.
Because you know what? Sometimes.
Even if she is, you don't say it out loud.
Well, I mean, sometimes you gotta.
You sing it instead.
Exactly.
I guess the question is, like, is she actually singing out loud? Or is it like an inner monologue?
I mean, also, like, doesn't Belle want more than this provincial life? And then she just kind of goes to a castle that's right next door.
And, like, also just lives the rest of her life in that castle.
I mean, you know.
What? What do we know?
I just want to say, like, it's really hard to even do this because obviously all three of us really love these movies. And I feel like it's very, nitpicky. Well, but it's, like, there's still things to, I mean, it's still, like, real things to talk about. And
I just want to say that I wanted to check the Flynn Rider hot man meeting, and I went to type in Flynn Rider, and my top suggestion on Sarah's computer is Flynn Rider hot man meeting in purple at the top.
I've looked it up.
Great. Looks like we attacked the Lion King and the Beauty and the Beast a bit.
Yeah, haven't attacked Ariel.
Little Mermaid.
It's because you can't.
No, I can't.
Yikes.
Ariel, man. I really love that you called Simba a brat when there's little Ariel. I'm 16! Dad, I love him! She obviously was always interested in the human world.
Yes.
But the thing that pushes her over the edge is Prince Eric.
Yeah, but don't we do that in high school? Like, when we're 16 years old, don't we do that? I mean,
sure, but I don't, you know. It's relatable, but is it admirable?
But I mean, what do we want? I mean, we do have admirable qualities, but one of the things that makes Ariel so great is because she's relatable. It's like Ariel's one of those characters you don't feel like it's like out of your reach to be or to aspire to be. But it's
she's a mermaid though.
Well, yeah, so you aspire to be a mermaid, but you are the 16-year-old girl that she is.
But then, like, at the end, what does she get? She just gets married, and she's also stuck in a castle.
But she's not, because there's, like, two extra movies where we get to see that Ariel can go back in the ocean.
Are we talking about the other movies?
I'm just saying, like...
Are we accepting those as canon?
I pretend they didn't exist sometimes.
So. What? I don't know. We're only talking about Disney Renaissance era film, so these movies were made in, like, 2006 or something, so... Great. As you mentioned, part of your world, we know that Disney movies have amazing soundtracks. So as we move into the next category of music, all these movies have, I mean, the music is amazing. So have fun with this one.
I mean, come on. Come on. This is like not even close here. listen. Beauty and the Beast, like the actual song Beauty and the Beast, won. For best original song at the Oscars. Beauty and the Beast, the song, like, was turned into a pop version, and that was actually the first time in... I looked this up, fact checker, because I looked this up, and it was the first time in 30 years that a Disney song made the pop charts. So that song pretty much... made all the Disney movies from then on out have alternative pop versions, which are just hugely important to all of these movies and to their pop overall culture's success. It set the standard and set the bar for what a Disney movie, animated movie should be, just by that song. But then you've also got like all this other incredible music, and the amazing thing is, with this, all three of these were Broadway shows, which is so kind of really cool, too. So that's why these three are actually incredible. But Be Our Guest is kind of like a Disney anthem. I think the actual scene of Be Our Guest is one of the most memorable in Disney movie history. Belle, the way that movie opens, I love that song. I just think it's so pretty. I do. even Gaston. Gaston's got, obviously, Le Fou and Gaston have a great song, Gaston. Even the song about the villain's amazing. And then the mob song is, like, so epic. I mean, we are talking every single song in that. I'm going to win this one.
I will take your point about pop versions of Disney songs and say that first pop version of a Disney song did lead us to True to Your Heart by 98 Degrees.
Oh my God.
So that's like points there.
Thank you.
Because
Celine
we wouldn't have, yeah. And don't forget Peebo Bryson. It's got Peebo. That Peebo magic.
Peebo Bryson, if you're watching.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Tiffany. Another Alan Menken movie soundtrack, The Little Mermaid.
Alan Menken and Howard Ashman. I feel like I could mic drop after that because what else do you need for a better argument? It was their first time like working together with Disney, their first project for Disney. And both Howard Ashman and Alan Menken are legends when it comes to producing music for Disney films. I mean, every single song that they write is pretty much incredible. I mean, they did all those songs from Beauty and the Beast and look how good those were. But you couldn't have had any of those if we didn't have the soundtrack to The Little Mermaid. And... I really encourage anybody up here or anybody watching, literally anybody anywhere, to find a more impactful or honest or sincere performance from any other vocal performer in Disney history than Jodi Benson with Part of Your World. I mean, that song alone, I feel like, changed so much from what we kind of expect out of a Disney soundtrack, change what we expect out of a Disney character. That song is phenomenal in and of itself. It defines Ariel. It defines that movie. Probably one of the most iconic songs within Disney's entire repertoire of soundtrack songs.
I will say that, speaking of Jodi Benson in The Little Mermaid, she's probably one of the only princesses who can still sing that song today.
It's true.
Sound exactly like the movie.
Exactly like the movie.
Well, there's no princess in my movie, so irrelevant.
I'm just stating a statement.
That doesn't mean anything in terms of like how good the songs were.
I think
the little face.
You could True. Part of your True. World was almost cut.
It was almost cut. I mean, could you imagine what Little Mermaid would have been? Not even just within the soundtrack, but what the whole film would have been like if you did cut part of your world.
It would be terrible. That's why it shouldn't even be considered if it could be terrible without one song.
What? I'm not saying it would be terrible. I'm just saying,
like, you were going in that direction.
No, I'm just saying, like, it was such an iconic part of Little Mermaid that, like, the fact that one song can define such an epic moment, I think, speaks a lot.
That without that song, the movie is garbage.
Oh, my gosh. And the Little Mermaid soundtrack, especially compared to Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King, definitely gives you the most variety of types of songs, which I think is fun. You get like a Calypso song, you get this really beautiful Want song. Poor Unfortunate Souls doesn't sound like anything else. You get a French song with Le Poisson, and even like Kiss the Girl is like a little kind of like doo-wop-y. And Beauty and the Beast, most of the songs all kind of fall under this fairy tale-ish realm, and Lion King songs all have a very heavy African influence throughout every song. So I think it's also really fun to have such a diverse type of music available on the soundtrack that all somehow still seamlessly works together.
Can You Feel the Love Tonight is African? I didn't know.
Listen to it. Because if you listen to Can You Feel the Love Tonight, the backing vocals are very much true. The same as Circle of Life.
Yeah. Anyway.
Part of Your World is in good company with Over the Rainbow, which was also almost cut from Wizard of Oz, and they're both I Want songs, so they're kind of siblings.
And I mean,
it's in good company.
Rainbow,
you know?
Fun fact.
Yeah, fun facts.
Amazing. Sarah, The Lion King. Great
Let's
music.
Let's talk about it. The Lion King. Wow. The first Disney Renaissance Great. Movie to start with an iconic song right from the get-go. It always scared me as a kid when it starts out of nowhere and you can never predict what it was going to start. Circle of Life, guys. First of all, let's go to the accolades just right off the bat. Multiple songs from The Lion King were nominated for Best Original Song. Hakuna Matata, Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and Circle of Life. And it won for Best Song for Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and it won Best Original Score as well.
All three of these movies won original score, by
but
the way.
But did they win both and have multiple nominated?
I've been looking at the awards for each of the soundtracks. Yeah. I do believe Lion King has the most.
Haha. Anyway, Circle of Life is an iconic, not only Disney song, but Disney visual moment paired with the song. And, you know, I think that all of the songs are strong. There is no weak song on the Lion King soundtrack. The weakest song would be Lion Sleeps Tonight, which is still an iconic, like, folk song. And, like, the equivalent in your guys' movies are not as strong. Le Poisson, Lion Sleeps Tonight. And that's all I gotta say. Because we're going to duke it out.
Sarah, The Lion King is the top grossing Broadway musical of all time.
Okay. But the music of Beauty and the Beast is, I think, better. You know, you were saying how, you know, Little Mermaid's got, like, you know, all these different kinds of, you know, thing. That doesn't make it better. I mean, like, and then, you know, we've got an African sounding. Like, that's just one thing. But Beauty and the Beast just captures that. I know you'll say maybe it's just like a traditional music sound, but it like it's something that every single person, like when they want to hear like that, I want to hear a musical. Like that's what you think of.
Just is itching.
No, I was listening. I was listening.
I'm going to open the floor here to some rebuttals on some of these musical selections.
I feel like this is probably going to come off as like somewhat controversial, but when it comes to these pop song versions, I just feel like they didn't need to happen. Like listening to Elton John's version of Just Can't Wait to Be King just sounds like Kenny Loggins' Footloose. Oh my gosh, fact checker is having a moment.
Having
over
a
there.
Moment over here.
Like if you listen to them, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's the same song. It feels like it was, I don't want to say like a shtick, but it was something that it felt like they did to help, like, promote the movie, which is fine, but The Little Mermaid didn't need to do that. And those songs are, you listen to them and we love to listen to them and they're great and they feel so nostalgic to us, but they have such a definitive, like, 90s sound that they're not really classics. And I love that that Little Mermaid didn't have that, like, tacked on to the end of the soundtrack. Like, it just always seems like kind of an afterthought, and Little Mermaid soundtrack didn't have that, so you only get, like, the timeless versions of Part of Your World and Poor Unfortunate Souls, and it didn't need, like, some pop star to make it, you know, better.
Until Disney Channel came in and ruined it with Miley Cyrus.
But it wasn't tacked on the original soundtrack.
No, it was not.
I mean, I don't know. No one's even attacked Elton John. I was surprised.
Oh, well, that's what I did.
No, but, I mean, you're attacking the Elton John versions, not the fact that he wrote them.
He's a sir. You can't attack.
Oh, my God.
Sir
Elton
the first.
John.
I mean, honestly, it was a risk. Alan Menken and Howard Ashman obviously are the greatest.
Yeah, they are, which
and so
they
it was
did
a
right
risk.
Lion King.
It was a risk for them to have one very famous singer-songwriter write the entire soundtrack for a Disney movie. And they decided to do it, and they won the most awards.
Yeah, but I mean, when it comes to Academy Awards, let's be real.
Yeah, it's probably because also you had that star power name of Elton John, and like, and I mean, you even just said that you just said Alan Menken and Howard Ashman are the best, and they wrote these two.
What did they write?
They wrote these two, and I think this one's the best.
Also, just because the songs are the most diverse, I'm not using that as an argument to say that it's, like, better, but I'm saying as far as a listening experience, it adds more levels to that and really is a testament to their creative minds coming together to make them all kind of work together. Like, it's a really important showcasing of their talents, I think, that they can make it work.
The best-selling Disney soundtrack, like, from the original movie of all time was The Lion King.
Okay, here's the thing when it comes to numbers and how much money a thing makes in the box office. At this point, Disney has already shown that they can make a very successful, very amazing, very important animated film. But as they continue to build upon the entire Walt Disney Studios franchise as a whole, they're always going to make more money. That's without a doubt. I mean, look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, any sort of franchise, the next movie that always comes out makes more money. Then the movie after that comes out makes more money. That's just a natural progression of any sort of studios.
I don't think Hercules made more money than The Lion King, and it came out after.
Well, Hercules isn't as good as The Lion King, so.
I'm just saying, there's a flaw in your trend that you are analyzing.
Well, they
got to
keep making good things, though. Not that Hercules wasn't good, but like it's
not on the same level. Yeah. And I think you would also like agree to that, or you would be fighting for Hercules right now.
This is treading waters of opinion, but do we trust Billboard magazines? I feel like they're very reputable. Okay, they have a list of all of the Disney Renaissance songs ranked. Their top three, Hakuna Matata is number three. Yeah. Number two, they have A Whole New World, which we're not even talking about. Mm. Number one is Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid.
There you
now,
go.
Now, is this,
weird
who wrote this? Is this a written article? Is this an article, or is it a actual...
This was written
an article.
March 15th, literally 2 days. No, not 2 days ago. It was like a week ago.
But it's someone's
the Billboard staff. That's all it says.
Okay, so it's someone's opinion.
Opinion, but I figured reputable, like respectable magazine.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to music, like in the music industry, Billboard are, they're knowledgeable people, so.
So what that tells us is we can eliminate Beauty and the Beast for best soundtrack.
I'm not going to fight against that.
Because like some staff writer at Billboard wrote that.
I do think the title song of Beauty and the Beast should have been in the top three.
Yeah,
we can go on forever about all these movie soundtracks, but we already touched on this a little bit, but all three of these movies have a pretty iconic villain. So let's start over with The Little Mermaid and Ursula.
Ursula's amazing in every aspect. For starters, how fun is it and how amazing is it and even arguably progressive is it that her character is based off the drag queen Divine? That's pretty rad. That's kind of, you know, all those people that are writing against Beauty and the Beast now. It's kind of like, did you know this is, you know, this has kind of been going on for a long time. The support of, you know, an alternative community. When it comes to villains, every villain has a sidekick or multiple sidekicks. And Flotsam and Jetsam are the best sidekick villains that exist within the Disney universe because they're the only ones that do everything that they're supposed to do. They're not these kind of like fumbling idiots. They're not like really clumsy. They have a goal to do. They complete it. They don't really have any issues because of like their lack of ability to do so. And they're super creepy. They don't hold Ursula back. They actually help her on her quest against, you know, the Tritons. Poor Unfortunate Souls is an amazing song, for one. I feel like it's probably a super fun karaoke song when anybody that does, like, Disney karaoke, Poor Unfortunate Souls gets everybody, like, in it. Why? What is that?
I just realized that Ariel's name is Ariel Triton.
I mean,
like, yeah. I just have been like, what?
I guess. Like, is it their last name? Like,
probably. Good I'm question. Assuming.
Ursula, in regards to Gaston and Scar, is the scariest of all of them. She's humongous. She is larger than life. She's, like, purple and black. She has all of these tentacles. She has, like, a really booming, commanding voice. And I feel like when it comes to this kind of scare factor and what stakes exist with our main protagonist, that Ursula is kind of the scariest. She has magical abilities, and we don't really know the extent to what she can do, which I think is one of the scariest things at all. Like, she has all these crazy potions, and who knows what trauma she can do, not just to Ariel, but to anyone within the Little Mermaid universe.
To your point earlier that Jodie Benson can still sing Ariel songs and sound the same, Pat Carroll sounds exactly the same still. Like, she pops up every once in a while and will, like, do the song, or she read what the Haunted Mansion script at D23 a couple years ago.
Yeah. I have met Pat Carroll, and her normal voice and laugh is Ursula. And scary. I was in line to meet her, and I got chills. Like, Ursula feels so real and tangible because Pat Carroll is amazing. Her villains are great, and she's just kind of the scariest of the three that we're going to be talking about.
I will make a point that when Ariel visits Ursula's cavern, there's already, like, souls that she's, like, destroyed in her.
Yeah, and Ariel keeps going in anyway.
So I will attest that she is pretty scary. Moving on to The Lion King, we have Scar. What's going on with him?
Jeremy Irons. Anyway, let's talk about the scariest Disney villain, Scar. While other Disney villains are somewhat predictable in their actions, and you kind of know what makes them act a certain way, you can't trust a dude who would kill his own brother, no matter what. Can't trust him. Kills family. Kills his own family. That's way more than anybody else in this lineup has done, and don't even try to bring up that Ursula and Triton are related, because it's not canon.
It was gonna be.
It's not canon. Scar literally kills his brother. He wants to kill additional family members. He also, like, theoretically wants to, like, destroy the food chain, and almost succeeds in that. Be prepared. Oh, God. I would say it's possibly the best villain song. It's so good, and it's so scary. And he, man, I don't know, man. He's just, like, childhood trauma, killing his family. He's just got it all.
Scar commits regicide and fratricide.
There you go.
It's a lot of sides.
Those are the words. I don't know what those are.
Regicide's killing the monarch, yeah. And fratricide is killing your brother.
Yep.
I would also like to make a point that Jeremy Irons narrated Spaceship Earth in Epcot before Judi Dench.
Thank the Phoenicians.
Moving on to Beauty and the Beast, one of the only human villains that we're discussing today. Gaston.
Gaston, human, yes, and I think since he is human, that really is another reason why he is the best villain. Let's think about what Gaston has also become. I mean, Gaston is legendary beyond just this movie. I mean, Gaston is, like, a favorite character you go meet in the parks. Even, I mean, he's so dreamy. What other villain is dreamy? Dreamy.
He was the first handsome so villain cute. Ever.
Yeah. Get it, Patrick.
Oh, he's so cute.
And I think that is, I think I'm making a pretty good point there. That he's...
Do ya?
Yeah. He's a villain who ya also are like, oh gosh, I love him. I just want to be with him all day. So, I mean, that is Gaston. And he's got... Gaston and LeFou relationship is you've been talking a lot about great gay relationships in Disney movies, so that's fantastic. And Gaston, the song, like I said, classic, and the mob song is, like, man, I just love that song. I get fired up when I hear it.
You want to go kill a beast?
Yeah, you're trying to kill some beast. What's up?
Yeah, it's so fired up. Can you imagine me fired up?
I think this is it. I think that's what we're getting right now.
Gaston does get two songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got his own. He's got his own brew. Have you tried Gaston's brew?
Yeah.
I'm seeing that better. Linda Wolverton, who wrote the script, based the character on some of her ex-boyfriends. Oh, and I think that his masculinity is like what makes him maybe the scariest and more the most like relevant. I think that's a very solid argument.
He's a person.
He's scary relevant still.
So opening up the floor a little bit, do we have any rebuttals on any of these villains? Why are they scary? Why are they not scary?
Gaston is so easily defeatable.
He is. The stakes are not high in Beauty and the Beast for me. Because, like, our protagonist is Belle, and with Gaston, Belle is never in any real danger. He's just kind of a douchey, jerky
guy. Well, I mean, we don't know. If, like, I will say that, like, there could have been some terrible stuff that happened to Belle. But, like, it's only because the Beast is kind of given up at the point where they have their final battle that Gaston even has, like, any fighting chance. If the Beast were, like, full Beast mode, nope. Joke intended. He would have been like instantly destroyed.
But again, I don't think that I don't know that that matters. Again, because we're talking about like Gaston is a human, he's a person, sure. So it makes him a little like. I just feel like I don't know. A lion is like already pretty scary, and so Ursula. I mean,
both of your characters are very tangible too, though. Like they.
I guess
it's
a
lion and a guy.
It's pretty
Ursula
funny that even
this...
at like Ursula's scariest, like she's like wielding the whole ocean, and then it's just like. And she's done. That's it.
Well, the same could be like boop. With the same thing with Mufasa. It's like boop. Like,
I'm not fighting for Mufasa.
But I'm saying, well, Scar, like Scar's like you know, I'm just
Scar.
You can make that sound effect on anything to make it seem less important.
Scar wasn't as easily destroyed. Like even when like Simba's just like boop over a cliff, and that's not what kills him. It's his own turning on him that kills him.
Can we just replace every Disney death with a boop boop boop?
Gaston stabs
funny
the beast.
When she's like, I have the power of the whole ocean.
She gets stabbed in the stomach with
the
ship.
She could have controlled the wave that was carrying the ship.
Oh my gosh. Well, when it comes to Scar, Scar kind of doesn't even have like a backbone. Like, yes, he kills Mufasa, but only when it is at higher ground, when he has like full control of the situation. Like, he's not, he doesn't really confront anything. He tries to do it like a really weird, like,
yeah, sneaky and scary.
Yeah, he like is sneaky, but he's also like, I feel like he's just, his character wise is kind of weak. Like, he cowers when Simba is like confronting him at the end, and he does like a pretty low blow of like throwing the fire like in his eyes. And he
like I said, is unpredictable. You strike a deal with Ursula, you know she's always down for a deal, but with Scar, you never know. He might throw ashes in your face.
I don't know. I think it's a weak guy that hits a girl, and he definitely backhands Sarami.
Oh, for sure. That's what makes him even more terrible.
Yeah, but that's a sign of like a weak man, you know, that like preys. He preys on children and women. Like, yeah, it's like terrible, but
it's
also
terrible.
Like,
it's a terrible villain.
But he's like, it's a weak character. He's not a strong, confident guy.
Great point, guys. We're going to move on to the next category here. Of course, all Disney movies end up with a little moral or message. What are the message of these movies? Let's start off with Sarah and The Lion King. What is the message of The Lion King?
The message of The Lion King, now that I'm thinking about it for the first time, is that you can't run away from your responsibilities, which is a good lesson.
It's actually a line in the movie. I believe
can't
it's
change
like,
the past. You can either
run from it. Also, I think there's multiple messages. That's the main one, which is a great universal message, no matter your age, your gender, your species. Also, Hakuna Matata is a great one for people with anxiety like me. And I think you could also say, like, you know, don't murder is a good one in there as well.
The moral of The Lion King
is don't murder.
Can we check that?
Yes.
Beauty and the Beast has some great messages as well. Max, what are some of the messages over on Beauty and the Beast?
Well, you know, what a lovely moral we've got with Beauty and the Beast, you know, because really what's inside is most important. You know, we've got two people that love each other after society has shunned them, and they come to find love through through their differences. Like, society's like, you guys are weird. Get out. You're weird. You read and you're a beast. So, and I mean, it really is. The message is really, you know, what's inside is most important, not what's outside. And, yeah, it's good.
Don't judge a book by its cover. Yep.
That one.
moving on to The Little Mermaid, Tiff. What is the message of The Little Mermaid?
I think I covered some of this when I was talking about Ariel, but what Little Mermaid is a coming-of-age story that really, I think, encourages people and promotes the idea of, like, really finding out what you want in life and then having the courage to go get that, regardless of what those consequences might be, and being aware of what that is and have, you know, knowing that that you can accept your fate. Because Ariel takes very big risks. She knows what she wants to do, but she knows that if she does succeed in what she wants, she's never going to see her family again. And then if she doesn't, she's basically going to be Ursula's prisoner. So she knew exactly what she was getting into, but she has bravery and courage and the confidence to go after really what she wants. And I think there is a nice message about love, which we love in all of the Disney movies. And I mean, I don't really see a problem in believing in love at first sight.
Great, we've heard some of the messages from these movies. Now I'm going to open the floor. Anyone want to go for this?
I think it says a lot that, like, you can't say the moral of The Little Mermaid without, like, a full paragraph. Like, there's no, like, what is the message of The Little Mermaid?
The message of The Little Mermaid is going after what you want.
Okay.
Is that a...
It's knowing what you want and, like, it's having the confidence to follow your dreams.
Yeah.
I guess.
Period. What do you mean, you guess?
I think it's just, like, way more, like, convoluted... What?
Belle has Stockholm syndrome. This is like what everybody says about Beauty and the Beast.
I think it's just like a more convoluted message than either of our two movies.
I think it's more complicated, which makes it more interesting. Because there's a lot of layers to The Little Mermaid. And when you really dive into like, it, it's not as simple as don't judge a book by its cover. It is a lot of other things. It makes you question, like, your relationship with your family. It makes you question, is what you want really worth going for it? It's like, a lot more layers to it that I think...
I think they don't know what the moral is. Because you're like, oh, there's so many different layers. Just like there's so many different styles of music.
Just a mosh posh of randomness over there.
Boop.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, that's all I gotta say about that.
I mean, Hakuna Matata is great, but, like, at some point you gotta pay your rent, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can't... Living a full, like, completely immersing yourself in the Hakuna Matata lifestyle, I think, can be very irresponsible.
I agree, and I wouldn't say it's the main message of The Lion King. The main message is you have to take your responsibilities seriously. And then the side one for funsies is Hakuna Matata.
So you can have, like, side ones in multiple layers, but Little Mermaid can't?
I wouldn't say you have side ones, and I didn't say multiple layers, I said side ones. Yours has side ones and multiple layers, and it took you a long time to say what the moral was.
No.
Mine's concise.
His is the most concise.
Which I think is
concise.
Like a more simple story, which isn't like, I don't know. I think when there's more lessons to be learned, that makes a more compelling story.
Finally, we have reached our final category. Of course, all these movies are very important in terms of Disney history, but which one is the most important part in the Disney legacy? Starting with Max, why is Beauty and the Beast so important to Disney and its legacy?
Gosh. Well, I mean, I've said this many times, but, you know, it really set the bar. And I know Little Mermaid was first, but, if we're talking legacy. So in terms of just animation, the cap system was used in this movie for the first time. That's a Pixar technology.
I had just Googled that.
Cool.
Yeah, we were on the same page.
Nice.
The cap, you want to fact check that?
Uh-oh. Caps.
Anyway, keep going.
Uh-oh.
Was it the first?
First yes. was the first Skewers Disney. Down Under.
Oh. What? We always forget that movie exists, don't we?
Really?
Yeah.
It was
actually
for Rescuers Down Under.
Yeah, the cap system was first used by Rescuers Down Under. But I would say the movie that like is most notorious for...
I mean, the ballroom scene is Caps. I mean, I Pixar created that before they were Pixar. And also, there were, 3D, the 3D backgrounds with the 2D, animated characters, that was, the first Disney movie to use that.
I just want to add really quickly, we're both wrong. The first Disney movie to use caps, period, was The Little Mermaid. At the end, what? With the rainbow.
What?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure? Wikipedia is telling me that that's true. The system's first feature film
test. Tiff just wrote that in right
was
now.
Was in the edit.
That's true. I'm going to be looking some stuff up.
It was used in a single shot of the rainbow sequence at the end of the film.
All right, well, caps was used most notably in Beauty and the Beast for the first time. We'll go with that. So animation style, we already talked about the music. First animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture, the Oscars. In the Disney parks, we got the Be Our Guest restaurant. I mean, this has got a whole restaurant. We've got food items that are so popular. The gray stuff. There are lines to eat this thing. I'm telling you, the universe of Beauty and the Beast, like, all these years later, is so big and ever-growing, and there's new stuff constantly. The costumes, I can go on and on. I don't know if I should keep going on and on.
I was gonna say, what just happened?
It is the first of the Renaissance movies to get a live action. And it made $170 million in its first weekend. Sounds pretty good. The power of Beauty and the Beast, it set the bar, it set the standard, and I don't think that anything touches it, really.
There was an article in the LA Times 4 days ago called Why I Waited 2 Hours for an Elusive Beauty and the Beast Cup. Those, like, the cups with, like, the rose inside. People are nuts for Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because it just had a live-action movie. Like, there's a lot of that, like, in your favor right now, I feel like. When it comes, like, Red Rose Tavern and Belle and the Beast and Gaston wouldn't have their presence in Disneyland right now without the live-action push.
But, I mean, actually, that Be Our Guest restaurant in Disney World is, like, constantly booked. You got to book your reservations for that a long time in advance, so.
Yeah. Sarah, why is Lion King such a big part of Disney and its history?
I want to point out that the reason I said Caps was first used on Rescuers is because it was the first full movie to be used with Caps.
That is correct.
Anyways. Okay. Just fact checking myself over here. The strongest thing that Lion King has going for it that I know Tiff is going to shoot down immediately is that it was the highest grossing Disney Renaissance film. Even considering inflation, it was the without a doubt the biggest Disney Renaissance movie. The hype for it was the biggest of any Disney Renaissance movie. The only thing that I think rivals the hype that Lion King had in the 90s is Frozen in our current decade. Nothing was bigger. And so I think just in terms of like pop culture significance, it was like maybe the movie that like brought more people into Disney at the time because it was like something that literally everybody went to see. Whereas with like the earlier Disney Renaissance movies, people like they certainly, you know, created the Disney Renaissance, but people didn't even know to go see Disney movies because they were so bad for so long. But by the time Lion King came around, it was like, now we can all come together and love animation. It got its own parade at Disneyland. Was it the first one to get its own parade?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was. Oh, wow. Lion King it started a trend parade. Of new animated releases getting their own parade at the parks, which they don't do anymore and they should.
Tiffany, where's The Little Mermaid in its place in Disney history?
Okay, just have to point this out before I forget to mention it during a rebuttal. But when you compare like Lion King to the hype of Frozen, like Tangled is a better movie than Frozen and it didn't get the hype, so I don't know that it makes it necessarily better, but I'm not going to argue that it does have an impact on its place in history. But we're talking about Disney history and how these movies play a part in that, and The Little Mermaid does play the biggest factor in the Renaissance era for Disney films because it saved the studio and it saved animation for Disney. They definitely were in a slump and The Little Mermaid brought them back out and kind of like breathed new life into the studios to make such great films like Beauty and the Beast and Lion King and Aladdin and all these subsequent films. Little Mermaid had such an impact on people in pop culture that it immediately got an animated TV series Beauty and the Beast. It took a while, but it was like a live action one, and Lion Guard is like new. So it followed up with an immediate animated series that still had almost all of the original voice cast, like Jodie Benson was Ariel. And Little Mermaid has by far, it's not even an arguable fact, by far has the biggest presence in every single Disney park in the world. Ariel or some aspect of the Little Mermaid, be it like Under the Sea, is in almost every single parade, is in every single nighttime show. It has the most attractions. It even has its own land in Tokyo Disney Sea. So just the fact that it is in, it is a staple of a Disney park. She's not missing from every Disney park in the world. She's always there. That's how iconic she is. That's how much everybody loves a Little Mermaid, and really proven how important it is in Disney history for parks and resorts to put the money in and the time in to make it such a big part of the parks itself.
Sarah, I hate to do this you.
What was the first parade?
Aladdin's Royal Caravan.
Well, Aladdin's not being argued today, so.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do we have any rebuttals on any of these movies in history?
I just want to say that, like, even if Tangled is better than Frozen, Frozen is definitely, like, the, like, cornerstone of this era of Disney movies.
I didn't say that it didn't. I'm just saying, like, hype doesn't mean a better movie necessarily, but that it does impact its place in pop culture.
These three, like, these three movies are legit. Like, I mean, amazing.
I feel like I see more people saying that Little Mermaid is their favorite movie than any of the ones that we're talking about.
Oh no, I think that when we see the comments of this video, Lion King is going to get quite a bit of attention.
And I think, especially currently.
I will confirm that yes, Lion King is the top grossing. Like it. Like accounting for inflation.
Yeah. Inflation.
So that is our debate today. Thank you guys for watching. Let us know down in the comments below who you think won this debate, or if you guys have another option in there. Should Aladdin been debated? Let us know down in the comments. Thank you, Tiffany, Max, Sarah, and of course our fact checker, Chelsea. Make sure to stay tuned. We're going to throw some more Disney debates out there, and they're not all going to be movies. I think we're going to do a parks one next, so let us know what we should debate about the parks down in the comments below. And of course, a huge thank you to Popcorn Talk for sponsoring this episode. Make sure to check them out at youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network, where they talk about everything from Disney to Marvel to Star Wars. Of course, Sarah and Leah host Disney Movie News, so check that out over there. Thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next time on Disney Debates.
Yeah. See ya. Bye.